As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of 5-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
That's right. The Drive is live, and we are on the road, and this is our crawfish circuit. And we're out here every single Friday at different spots, and this is the third leg, and it brings us, as we said, here at the Rusty Horseshoe.
What leg is it?
The third leg. What did I say? You like the third leg?
I mean, I don't know. I just there's something
gotta get
about
up,
that,
we got to get off this third leg.
About the third leg of the old crawfish circuit. Every time you say it, I don't know where you're going.
You go right to,
Well, we missed an opportunity all week, didn't we?
No. You hit it last. You hit it yesterday. You hit it yesterday with Greg Olson. Big Greg with the third leg.
Yeah.
But yes, we are on the third leg of our crawfish circuit here at the Rusty Horseshoe in spring. And like Clint said, man, when you get out here, you'll be like, oh, man, this is a spot. Bring the kids, man. They've got a turf on the outside, and they've got different things, picnic tables. They got swing set and slide over here for the kids to come hang out. And I know y'all kids ain't at school. It's Good Friday, so you can come on out here and let them run around. And they've got multiple bars. They've got 2 bars inside, bar outside. They got TVs literally everywhere, lined up all the way around the entire place, and TVs outside as well, comfortable seating outside as well. And they got some specials. They got $5 margaritas.
Who?
Out here. There you go. That's the wrong menu. But they got $5 margaritas out here. Got you a little glass of wine. Get you a glass of wine for $4. They got what you need out here. So come on out and enjoy yourself. And as we said also, if you are here, you might want to sign your name and put it in our raffle box, because you got a chance to win a $25 gift card to Academy Sports and Outdoors. And that's going to happen once an hour. Once an hour, you got a chance to win. And while we're at that, shout out to our good friends at Academy Sports and Outdoors and Bud Light, who are helping us put this together. But come on out. It'll be a good time. Good food, good drinks. The Bugs, right? They got the Bugs out here. And and good conversation, and win a little something while you're out here.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to be out in this part. We get some great support out here on the northwest side, if you will, and we appreciate everybody that's here. We appreciate everybody that's on their way, and anybody that's listening and might stop by, man. We greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, that's right. Tyler is out today.
Tyler said, "To hell with y'all. Y'all going to be at a bar somewhere drinking beer. I am too. Hell, I'm going to San Antonio. I'm going to one up y'all. I'm going to go to San Antonio and I'm going to Hill Country and drink some cold beer with my bride." Boy, Tyler's always got one better, don't he?
He told me he was going to text me or call me drunk from the River Walk. That's his exact words when I last saw him.
Tyler busted up on the River Walk just does not seem safe for Megan.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't seem safe for anyone.
Tyler strikes me as an old boy that may be walking that old river walk and get too close to the edge. And he wouldn't fall in, but he's going to pull somebody in trying to save himself.
No, he'd fall in too. He'd fall in. He'd be on his phone. He'd fall in.
Yeah, trying to text his bets.
We took our kids to San Antonio last year, Clint, and at the time I got 10, 7, and 4-year-olds. And Clint, boy, it was just anxiety the entire time walking on that thing, because especially the youngest, they ain't looking. They just moving, just looking, walking down, and just sliding themselves to the edge almost. And I'm pushing them back in the whole time. I couldn't wait till we got off of that damn thing, till we sit down in a restaurant or something, so I could just calm myself down. I feel like Tyler's doing that as an adult right now. I really do. Shout out to Byron, a.k.a. Bryce, who is holding down, producing this thing. Little Bryce Young, although I think Byron's bigger than Bryce Young, but little Bryce Young in the building holding it down, and I know we're in good hands.
That's a good question. I'm going to need to Google that.
Byron, how tall are you? How much you weigh? Byron ain't. Now, they said that Bryce was 209 at the combine. We all know he's not. Byron, how tall are you?
5'8".
Yeah, you ain't got him.
I think probably a little thicker than him, though. How much you weigh?
He's 165.
155.
Oh, wow.
Over 10 off. Yeah.
Damn, Byron, I was giving you too much credit. You should have went along with me, man.
Appreciate it.
5'8", 155. You ain't got Bryce.
Byron weighs what people think Bryce does. That's what
Bryce, right.
Bryce thinks he's 155. But no, man, we're in good hands here. Again, make your way on out here and stop and hang out with us. All right, Clint, there's a lot of places that we will cover today as the Houston sports scene is going, as the draft is next week. The
Big
Rockets
weekend,
gets,
man.
Yeah, the Rockets start up on Sunday. The Astros have the best team record-wise, the San Diego Padres coming into town. But I do want to start a little bit where the draft is, and I would love for people on the Texas Hammer, Jim Adler, text line to chime in, 713-572-4610, those of you on YouTube and Twitch as well. Clint, is there a case to be made that the Texans are in a kind of in a space where they don't necessarily need their number one pick to be a day one starter? Is there a case to be made that at 25, or where they end up, at, whether it's they move up, move back, whatever, in the first round, but that first pick, is there a case to be made that that first-round pick doesn't need to be a day-one starter?
No, I can't see it. I mean, I'm in aggressive mode for the Texans. Not quite as aggressive as they were when they went and got C.J. Stroud, obviously, and Will Anderson.
Oh, you don't want to go up to 2 and 3?
Yeah, no, but when they had all that kind of all of those bullets in the clip, if you will. I mean, that was ended up absolutely beautiful. I hope we never see anything like that again with the Texans. Hopefully, you win enough, you don't need to do that. But look, I just think. I think the Texans are in a spot where if you can acquire a plug and play starter, and D'Amico Ryans has said his first round picks he expects to be plug and play starters. If you can acquire a plug and play starter on this team right now, built the way they are, I think it's a huge plus. I think building depth at this point in time obviously is important. Getting developmental players that down the road. Could be that's fine. All of that is great building the team, but I think the Texans right now number one priority is you've got three more years with C.J. Stroud on that rookie contract. Man, you got to be as aggressive as you possibly can to get difference makers on the field. And the truth of the matter is that there's a couple positions on the offensive side of the football and one on the defensive side of the football where a plug and play starter with a high ceiling could change the game for you. Could absolutely change the game for you, and I think being this is a time to be more aggressive than time to slide and take multiple picks and build more picks.
Yeah, I personally tend to agree with you. The only way that I think the case is made, Clint, is if they are in the feeling of a different situation than they were last year. So last year when they made all of those, hey man. We know we got a rookie quarterback. We went to the second round. We saw our rookie quarterback is special. We see a development of Nico Collins. We love what we got here. When they saw that, they went out and said, "Hey, we got Tank. We got Nico. Yep. Let's add Steph Diggs. Let's go get one of the best pass rushers in the game in Danielle Hunter. Let's add him. They added pieces to say, let's go for it.
They added win now pieces.
They added
no doubt.
Win now pieces. They went in even the draft in the second round. We had our issues with Lassiter, but they went in there and said, we're getting somebody who we're going to. And they did it. They put him as a day one starter. Hell, rookie camp, training camp, mandatory mini camp, Kamari Lassiter was the starter at corner. They made all of those moves to let's go right now. Joe Mixon as well to help the running
Dalton
game.
Schultz re-upped.
Dalton Schultz, they went and gave him $12 million. They made those moves. Do you feel that right now? Do you feel like that team, I know how you feel like they should, but their actions to me don't show that they're a team that is we're ready to go right now. So I can see what you said as potentially, yeah, maybe they draft a tackle. Maybe they draft a position where you think, I don't know if that guy can walk in and play right away because maybe they are still in the build-up and not necessarily in the Super Bowl-like expectation like it felt like they were in last year. That's, to me, the case to be made is there is a build, so they may draft for things of maybe he's not ready right now, but he's ready next year.
Yeah,
and I didn't think they were in that space, but their offseason screams that to me.
Well, yeah, look, I just don't think the Texans are there yet. I mean, I know they've been to the second round two straight years. The improvement is you didn't get embarrassed in the second round. You competed in the second round, again, with an AFC power. So you're obviously moving in the right direction. But I think the Texans are still, especially on the offensive side of the football, you're still a couple of players away from being a true Super Bowl contending offense, right? I mean, they're a couple of players away from that, and I believe that you got to go get them while the getting's good. I mean, the reality. Let's talk wide receiver, just because it's easier to tab a wide receiver, right? It's easier to look at Xavier. I'll use the Chiefs, Kansas City Chiefs with Xavier Worthy. They go out there and get a guy that they know can absolutely take the top off the defense, right? He ends up being. They end up hitting on him. He ends up being better than expected. But they knew when they drafted him, he was going to be a guy that could take the top off the defense, right? And those are the kind of moves, to me, that the Texans need to be making. Not the trading back and building depth and drafting, again, developmental players. If they can hit – look, let's be honest. The Texans have to avoid the Kenyon Green, obviously. You have to avoid – like, if you avoid that, you're in the green, no pun intended. That's a huge plus. But what they've got to do is they've got to try to land more in the Kamari Lassiter role. Draft a guy that you're willing to commit to the way you committed to Kamari Lassiter. Don't try to tell me that everything's about creating competition when I look up and you draft Kamari Lassiter and you stick him out there. They were right. Now, don't get me wrong. I was wrong. They were right. But there was no competition with Kamari Lassiter. He was plugged in from jump, and he was a starting outside corner from jump. That's what I believe the Texans need to move forward attempting to do.
I'm with you. Like, I thought once we saw CJ's rookie season that this was a team that was, in go-forward mode, which is, as a fan, you'd love. But, Clint, if we're honest and take a step back and don't – and just be objective, what they've done in the offseason and their total roster right now, they don't have the feel of a team that is a team that you would put in the Super Bowl category. I think last year they did. I felt like last year they did. It felt that way. This year they haven't been aggressive to make moves, and their roster right now, like, where do you have major questions for this team's roster?
Speed overall.
Speed.
Interior line.
Offensive line.
Wide receiver. The number two run. If you got to sell me on how good of a kick returner your number two running back is in this game,
and we will address that.
I mean, that's not
play caller.
Yeah. I mean, play caller and interior defensive line. I would say.
Yep.
I mean, if you're talking about just, I mean, those positions aren't terrible. But if you're talking about like if you're going to be a Super Bowl contending team, like, where do you need to improve? I mean, I think that's it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Going into the draft, there's not many Super Bowl contending teams where you're like, yo, I got a serious question on their play caller. Got a serious question on their offensive line. I got a question on weapons. Right, like when you've arrived there.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be a playoff team, and they could get there. I'm just saying right now, when you look at it, they sound and their roster looks like a team that is still, like, building. Like,
yes,
to
yeah.
me, their roster sounds like the Broncos or the Chargers that are still like, hey, we are competing. We expect to be in the playoffs. But are we to a point where we're like, yes, we're there with the Bills and the Ravens and the Chiefs? Not quite yet, but they're still building to that. That's what this roster feels like. So if they do go and draft a tackle that is more of a future play, that is a guy that they may see that would explain that. Or to me, they would be a lot more aggressive than they have been in the offseason. And I don't know if they go up to do that.
And everybody thinks this is being negative, and it's not. It's just the reality of the situation. Like I think it's clear that D'Amico Ryans is running the defense, and Nick Caserio is heading up the offense. I think that's very clear.
That's the case.
Well, I mean, it's not hard to get there, right? I mean, it's at the very least a Nick Caserio heavy operation on the offensive side of the football. I mean, D'Amico knows exactly what he wants, who he wants, and he's going out and getting, and he's paying for it. Offensively, I'm not saying it's negative. It's just the reality of how they're building the offense. There's a very New England-esque approach. It's a do more with less. It's about the whole group, right? It's not about one superstar player. It's about the whole group. And you're going to ask your quarterback to do more with less. I mean, that right now, I don't know how anybody else lands anywhere other than there when you look at how the Texans are being built.
That's a good thought.
I don't know how you land anywhere else. Just the reality of the situation. And I'm not saying we saw from – now, if I hadn't seen C.J. Stroud's rookie year and see him play the game, play the position the way
really,
he played it,
really
I'd be really concerned. I'd really be nervous. But I think we've seen C.J. Stroud do some of his best work with – less and having to overcome some shortcomings and playing a smarter brand of quarterback versus I'm going to go out there and be, you know, guns blazing and be, you know, aggressive. So, again, I'm not knocking it. It's just the right now I don't know how anybody that watches, analyzes, studies, and roots for the Texans, I don't know how anybody feels like they're landing anywhere else.
Yeah, text line coming in. The offense is good enough if you believe their defense is as good as.
Ooh, look here.
As the mid 2000s Ravens defenses.
Well, that's a stretch, but the way they're building this thing, that's the hopes. I mean, the way they're building it is you're going to have one of the best defenses in the league, and if the stars align, and the pieces all gel and work together. Then you're talking about one of the best defenses long term in the league.
Yeah. All right, as we continue here live, as we are here at the Rusty Horseshoe Bar and Grill. There you go, in spring. That guy's going to win him something. If you are here and you have not filled your name and put it in our raffle box, you might want to do so. We will hook somebody up with our first gift card, $25, to Academy Sports and Outdoors. At 2 o'clock, we will get somebody a gift card. Once an hour, all you got to do is fill your name and put it out in our raffle box, and you will have a chance to be a winner. All right, coming up next. All right, we said it's a big weekend here in Houston, and for the Rockets, it starts on Sunday. We'll get into this Rockets-Warriors series, and in particular, do the Rockets have to win this series to make this a successful postseason? We'll discuss that coming up next. That's right. I see the bugs coming out. I see three of them. I see you, Mama. I see the three of them coming out right there. They got them in the bag. You see them pulling it out? Look at that.
Yeah, they got them. They got them by the pound back there in the bag. Ready?
There you go. There it is. So get on out here. Be the next one to get your bugs as we continue on our third leg.
Yeah.
Our third leg of our crawfish circuit. As we are live here in spring, we are in spring. Come make your way out. Yes, you get you some crawfish. There you go. Hey, I'm going to get some. Don't worry about it now. I'll get some out here. Damn, I can't stand Reggie and Luke. Boy, just put me right on out there. But we are live here at the Rusty Horseshoe Bar and Grill. And look at them bad boys. He just held one up. I know, Clint, you got 5 pounds in you, boy. I know it, boy.
Easy.
Easy. Easy. I mean, the way you took them out the other week, that was impressive. Always impressive.
I would guess that's 2 or 3 pounds on that deal he's got right there.
Yeah. My daughter, Lo, she went in there and got a quick 2 pounds last week.
Yeah, I can get you 4 in place right there. Maybe even 5.
I know you can. 5 of them. All right. All right. Yep. Well, come and join us as a good time's being had. And our first winner coming up here in a little bit. In the 2 o'clock hour, each and every hour, you got a chance to win a $25 gift card to Academy Sports and Outdoors. All you got to do is sign your name and put it in our raffle box right there. The first one's coming up here at the bottom of the hour. All right. As we said, Sunday's a big, big, big day here in Houston as the Rockets return to the playoffs for the first time in years, Clint. And I know we will talk about some of the, and we're going to get to that here in just a bit, some of the matchups and some of the small things in this series. But, Clint, overall, for you, as we are here, we know who the opponent is. It's Golden State. Golden State is favored in this series somehow. They were minus 200 earlier in the week. I think it got down to minus 130. But early, you could have got them at the start for minus 200 to win the series. But we know who the opponent is. And it is an opponent that is full of champions. We are opponents that have as much experience as anybody. When you look at Jimmy, who has led a team as a one to the finals twice, and obviously Steph and Draymond and Steve Kerr and company, they've won four championships. And, hell, even their young guys have competed and played in big playoff games. Now that we know where it is, do the Rockets have to win this series for this to be a successful postseason for you?
A successful postseason?
Yes.
Yeah.
They got to win it. If they,
I mean, to be a successful season? No.
No, the postseason. Postseason.
Hell yeah.
They got to win this.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I mean, you've to me, this is one of those things, kind of like the Texans have done. There was twice this year where the Rockets have been a two seed. They didn't just start hot and play good basketball when everybody else was you know, sleepwalking through the regular season. They did that, and then when it mattered the most, they climbed, and they got back to the two seed, and they finished the season ahead of some star-studded lineups, great basketball teams with all the championship pedigree and all the championship experience that you talked about, and they were able to separate themselves to a point where they could rest players for three or four games. And so, like, they've established themselves. They just squeak in.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't just squeak in. They didn't have to fight for their life to get in. I mean, they convincingly got in, and I know they're the dog to win the series, but they're the favorite in game one at home. So, I mean, they've got to win a series against a team that had to make a big boy move and go get Jimmy Butler midseason. They had to climb their way up into the play-in. So, yeah, I think
they got
to
win at least a series.
They got to win this series for it to be a successful playoff. Yes, absolutely.
For me, Clint, it depends on how it goes, man. And I think back to a couple of years ago when the Warriors were in this exact spot. They were, I believe, the sixth seed, and they were playing the Kings. And the Kings, this is when the Kings first started with Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox. And they had that young group. And they were the three seed. They had home court advantage, and that series went back and forth. And it ended up going seven games, and Steph Curry scored 50 in game seven, and they lost the series. To me, if it happens in that fashion, like they are going tit for tat, and they're going back and forth with the Warriors, and just, you know, Steph Curry is a special player, Jimmy Butler is a special player, And they are able to outlast them with their experience and everything like that. But I think you learn a lot about guys. Because to me, Clint, if this thing goes seven games, Clint, no matter how it, you know, who wins, I feel like we're going to learn a lot and a lot positively about guys like Jalen Green. I feel like we're going to learn a lot positively about guys like Alfred Shingun and Amen Thompson. So to me, if we get to a space in this series and we see the important guys that have to lead the way, not the Fred Van Fleets or the Dylan Brookses, those guys that we know aren't going to be the long-term answers. If the young guys that we look at to be, I mean, big mainstays moving forward with this thing come out and the moment's not too big and they play their asses off, but Steph and Jimmy and them just get them, I think to me that is – obviously, it feels moral victory-ish, but I think to me that is successful if we get a chance to learn and see how they act in this spot and they respond well and they just get beat.
I think you can take a lot of positive from it, all the youngsters
that
like
it wouldn't
you're
be
talking
successful
about. But for me, I just this is a team that had to fight and claw and scratch to get in the dance.
Come on, Golden State. Yes.
And I understand who they are, but the Rockets have established. I mean, they're not quite what OKC has done, obviously, but they're the closest thing to it. And I think they position themselves where you got to go get a series right here for this to be a successful playoff.
Yeah, from YouTube and Twitch, 99 Reasons says, with the Rockets playing Golden State, if they get swept, I don't view this as successful. But if they were playing any other team, they would have to win for it to be successful. I do think it's – I think the opponent makes something – I would feel different if it were the Grizzlies. I would feel different if it were held the Timberwolves. Any of these other teams that – but, man, if this group takes Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry and that group, like, to seven – games and they lose, like, I depending on how it is now to me, if this is a thing, Clint, where Fred goes crazy and this is Dylan Brooks and then Jalen Green and Shingun are the ones that are struggling and Jabari Smith, they're the ones that are struggling, then I feel a little bit different. But I understand the thought of that, not the moral victory thing.
No, I think there's – I mean, if there is a scenario, and I think you painted the only scenario.
It's the only,
That it'd be a hard – it'd be hard to say, nah, man, that wasn't successful.
Now, this is a 4- or 5-game series. Now, I'm out of that.
Yeah, look, I mean, the one scenario of the Rockets, you know, take them down to the wire of the final game and literally lose, you know – by one possession to Steph Curry and Jimmy. I mean, look, it'd be hard for me to sit here and say, they got to win this thing. But assuming it's not going to come down to that, I think they got to win one to make it all count.
And the reason why I think the big thing of success is, Clint, they should leave. We should leave whenever their season ends, whether it's in this round, if it's the next round, whatever.
Yeah.
Whenever their season ends, there should be real excitement of this team is coming.
Yeah, it's going. It's there.
You know what I mean?
I don't give a damn what happens.
No matter what happens.
Yeah, no, I'm there.
Clint, if they got swept by the Warriors, I don't know if
it would hurt. It would hurt, but I'm just telling you, personally, M.A. Doka, I absolutely love him. The way they play basketball, I can get behind. The physicality, the great defense, the hustle, the playing together. I don't give – let's not get carried away here. It's hard. It was hard for me to like the James Harden Rockets. It was hard for me to enjoy and watch unless he's just having a career night. This I can get behind and enjoy watching and appreciate more than just – and look, I respect what James did. I'm not minimizing it, but it's just me personally, it don't fit my eye. What these guys have proven they are, again, to be at the top of the NBA two different times, and play the style of ball that they play, I can get down with this crew, man.
Yeah. All right, coming up as we continue live here at the Rusty Horseshoe, I'm telling you, man, every time I look up, I see her bringing out new bugs, more bugs. I see a table here, everywhere getting bugs. So come on out and get yours as well as we continue this thing. All right, the Texans are in the area of the draft of 25, and we're going to take a look at maybe some of the picks here in the past to kind of get a gauge of what type of player they may be looking at. We will do that coming up next. That's right. The Drive is live, and we are here live at the Rusty Horseshoe here in Spring. And by the way, if you're in, there you go. Clap it up. Eat them bugs, too. That's all I keep seeing coming out. And by the way.
Hard to clap when you're eating bugs, for the record. Don't
yeah, but they're
mess.
Doing it, though. They're fine. My man right here, he sucked the juice right out of that head, didn't he? I see you. Remember, coming up, our first winner. We will hook somebody up with our first $25 gift card to Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're going to do that as soon as this segment ends. So if you have not gotten your name in our raffle box, you might want to do that before we hook somebody up as our first winner, coming up as soon as this segment ends, as we continue to roll through. All right, Clint, pick 25. If the Texans do stay there, whether or not they try to get aggressive like you really want them to, or maybe they say we're going to move back a bit, pick 25 is where they are. And, Clint, I know for you – I know you were looking around and with the help of some others, but looking to see kind of what caliber of player potentially the Texans can look forward to getting for the most part. Sometimes, you know, hell, you know, hey, Antonio Brown went the fifth or sixth round or something. But for the most part, the type of player you're getting at 25.
Well, I mean, the reality of it is Nick Caserio is number one in general managers around the league when it comes to movement in the draft right now. I mean, he's literally number one. Now, that's up and down.
Since he's been here, huh?
Just been aggressive in moving back, whether that's aggressive in collecting picks or it's aggressive in moving up in the draft. And drafting a better player or what's expected to be a better player. And so there's a lot of talk, obviously, about the Texans moving. And the reality is you got number 25 overall right now. And what does that look like? Jonathan Alexander of the Chronicle, he did a he went back, did a little history, a little digging. He did the last 15 years of number 25 overall picks in the NFL draft. In the last 15 years, you've had four Pro Bowlers picked and two All-Pro players. Now, that seems like a low number, but there hadn't been, relative to draft picks, I mean, there hadn't been a ton of all pros and pro bowlers to spread out over each draft pick. So I think those numbers are probably pretty good. The truth of the matter is, Nick said it in his comments yesterday, they're going to get a really good player, or the hopes are you get a really good player. There's been some good ones throughout, but I want to give you the last six, because all of these players right here, not necessarily the players specifically, but this caliber player is what I'm talking about when the Texans draft somebody that's a plug-and-play starter, that's an impact player that brings one elite trait to the team or another, right? When you look at the last six, we're talking about wide receiver Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, who went to the Ravens, wide receiver Brandon Ayuk went to the 49ers in 2020. 2021, Travis Etienne with the Jaguars. I know some folks aren't a big fan of Travis Etienne's, but I damn sure am. 2022, this is where I hope the Texans literally land, center Tyler Lindenbaum. I mean, that's a pretty good center. He's with the Ravens. Seemed like the Ravens have had some pretty good success.
Them late picks, right?
In these late first-round picks, right? 2023, Dalton Kincaid, who's in Buffalo. I'm a big fan of Dalton Kincaid's. I loved him coming out of Utah. More of a playmaking-style tight end, and he's flourished up there. I think we hadn't seen the best of him yet, but I'm a big fan. And then Terrion Arnold. He ended up with the Lions last year. So when you look at the caliber players, you're looking at guys that were plug-and-play starters and plug-and-play impact difference-making type players. And that's where, again, I'll go back to the Texans. I think they've established themselves as a playoff-caliber team. I think they need a couple of guys. They need speed overall on offense. They need to figure out, obviously, how to protect the quarterback. In order to be a true Super Bowl contending team. And I think they can do that with their first couple of picks this year.
Yeah. I'm listening to kind of that run of players that they've selected there, Clint, and I think a lot of it has to do with certain drafts, right?
The depth of the draft?
Yep, yeah, and this is why I completely 100% for the Texans agree with your overall stance of what you hope is done and what we're talking about this time next Friday. Is this doesn't feel like a draft that you'll find a Lindenbaum at 25.
Fair.
I feel like if Lindenbaum was in this draft, he would be gone. And any of those guys that have been really plug-and-play starters that you look at and you're like, I like it, Dalton Kincaid. I don't think Dalton Kincaid in this draft would be there at 25. Right, there's three tight ends that might go before 25.
Right, yeah.
Right. And that's why, to me, as you're reading that list and then knowing and comparing it with what this draft is, I'm with you. I think there is a certain amount of players that can really help you in this draft, especially at positions that you need help with. And that's why, to me, you got to get aggressive and go up, like you've been saying. Like, to me, I don't think, like, yeah, it'd be nice if you can get a Marcus Golden right there sitting at 25, but I don't think that player will be sitting there at 25. And I think right now, what you've read in the past, I don't think in this particular draft that type of player is going to be there.
Well, I think the Texans have reached a point where I don't know that they're the team anymore, and this is a plus. As a fan, you hope you get here. I don't know that you're a team anymore that can just sit there and go, okay, well, whoever's available at 25, man, we need them, right? They're going to fit. I think the Texans are in a spot, again, to go, hey, we need two or three different positions, or we really like two or three different guys. Hey, man, we got to jump two or three spots to go get that guy.
Yep.
Right? Even in the second round, like, hey, man, can we package that second with one of them third rounds and jump up earlier in the second and get a guy that may be at the top of that second tier of players after the first round comes and goes. So, yeah, this is a draft where I 100% hope that the Texans. Let's be honest. I've always been a be more aggressive guy in the draft, which is why I'm not a GM. But this is definitely one. This is definitely one for me where the team I think benefits by that.
And again, Clint, we could be dead wrong, and maybe Tyler Booker, which is a guy that I think a lot of people like. Potentially for the Texans, maybe he is that type of player, right? And or whoever else that could be there, maybe Luther Burden is that type of player if you go that route. But I think the odds are with this draft and how people have it graded, I think the better ones that you could feel really comfortable as, all right, man, I want to come away from the first round getting a surefire guy that's a starter that can really contribute and help. Our team trying to get, as they said, kick that door in.
Yeah.
To me, like, I'm not saying go up 25 to 10, but I mean 25 to 15, 25 to 17
I'd get good and turned on.
Get a certain guy, because I think that's – I don't know, Clint, if they sit at 25, I don't know how good I feel about, yeah, they're going to get a Lindenbaum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just the way this draft is right now, I don't know if that is.
Oh, there's going to be an absolute killer available at 25. The key is he a safety? Is he a corner?
Oh yeah, fits your.
That's the key, right? Is there's going to be an absolute game changer available just at 25? There always is. I mean, and I love what Nick and D'Amico have been able to do with those first and second round picks with these. I have no problem. The Kenyon Green thing was a huge miss, but they've been really, really good otherwise. And so, I trust whatever they do, but I know I personally feel like the organization's in a position to be really aggressive and go get them plug-and-play guys. Give me a couple of guys that their jerseys are in the stadium.
There are some drafts, we just said, there are some drafts where, man, this thing is deep, and you feel really good. I don't know if this is – this is quite the one, the way that people are projecting it.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
All right, welcome back as we are live here and having a good time here as our crawfish circuit continues. We are live here at the Rusty Horseshoe here in Spring. Make your way on out here. Listen, guys, they have TVs all up and down and around the place, even outside as well. They have TVs, comfortable seating. People are enjoying themselves. There's still picnic tables. There's still tables. There's still spots to come and enjoy yourself. And I see a band coming up behind us. So we got some live music out here. So it's going to be a good time out here. Enjoy yourself. Even after we're gone, we're here till 6. Clint, I might have to order some, might give me about 5 pounds and hang out here.
I think you should.
Hang out here a little bit and bang me out some crawfish.
I got three more pounds coming.
I know you do. And sushi. There you go. And sushi. So it should be a good time. But make your way on out here. Remember, if you're in the building or on your way, we are going to hook somebody up with our final $25 gift card. So if you have not signed up and put your name in our raffle box, that is coming up at the end of this segment. All right, Clint. Byron, I want you to play this audio from Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio spoke the other day about the running back position. And I wasn't even thinking, hey, it's going to be April and we're going to have a conversation about Damian Pierce, until he brought up what he said about Damian Pierce. And it made me think, as we get closer to the draft, is that one of the priorities, right? We believe interior offensive line is a priority. We believe wide receiver is a priority. But is another back a priority? And I mean not just a priority to build later, but right now, another back. Because right now, Damian Pierce is this team's backup running back. They even showed that they believed in him by trading, Cam Akers. They traded him to Minnesota because they felt like they were good with Damian Pierce. He had some injury stuff, but they felt that's the way they wanted to go. But Clint, hell, he ended up being a kick returner. That's what he ended up being. But this is Nick Caserio talking about his running back room.
Yeah, I mean, similar to the receiver question, I mean, there's a good group of backs. So, I mean, this goes back to the same thing. We'll stack the board. We'll look at what our options are, look at supply and demand. What are you passing up in lieu of something else? So that's pretty good room. We feel like we got, you know, pretty good cohort of players in that group. I mean, Mixon, I mean, I think he went to the Pro Bowl last year, so he's a good football player. I mean, DP was one of the top kickoff returners, and when he's played offensively, he's done a pretty good job with his opportunities. Say, Dare's got his role is kind of specific to the kicking game, so there's an opportunity for us to add a player that we think can help our team. We'll look at it. If we don't, then we'll go with whatever group. And again, like, everybody's focused on a draft, but there's other opportunities to add players to your team.
Clint, in your opinion, should the Texans move forward in trying to find a backup? I'm talking about a backup to Joe Mixon. Should they move forward in trying to find a Did you order some more bugs?
Oh, yeah. You know. I mean, just 3 pounds. Ain't no big deal.
Good God. That's five, baby.
Andy must have misspoke, but I'll knock
them
down.
Shout out to her. Give her a hand. She's been working her ass off tonight, man. I've seen her with multiple ones. But, Clint, before you tear into that 5 pounds.
I don't know that you finished that right. I've seen her with multiple ones. Where are you
multiple,
going with that?
Multiple bugs that she's been handing out to people.
Tables.
Not multiple whatever nastiness that you and Tyler are thinking right now. Stop being nasty, Byron. But do you think they should be moving on and trying to find as a priority a backup running back, because – Damian Pierce just doesn't fit that right now anymore?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Look,
even a change of offense with Nick Caley and a change of scenery.
I just don't see it, man. Here's what I would like to happen with the Texans at the running back position. You clearly got Joe Mixon number one. Again, I think he's one of the better second tier backs in the league. I'm happy with him. But the reality of it is you, when you talk about your number two back, you need a guy that either brings a level of playmaking ability to the field when he's there, or you need a guy that is a great complement to Joe Mixon, where you can at least spell him for 10-15% of the snaps in weeks 1 through 10, so you have him, you know, down the stretch, and you just don't get either. And that's it doesn't matter what the hell I think. That's just what the Texans have told us, that they don't believe that Damian Pierce can get on the field, in a secondary role to help Joe Mixon take some of the bang off Joe Mixon. Like that's just where we're at. And then you look at Dare Ogunbowale, and there's just not enough explosiveness, enough twitch. There's not enough playmaking ability there for him to be anything more than a trusty, reliable pass protecting back. And you've got, your offense has to move beyond that. I mean, it's wasted, Ron. And I hate to say it way.
It is so hard for me to look at that guy he was fourth in the league in rushing when he got hurt his rookie year.
Yeah.
And that dude, and we saw flashes. He had the big run against, and 100-yard day against the Patriots last year. He had the big run at the end of the season against the Titans. Yeah. And they really like him.
Yeah.
I'll
be honest with you. I think he should take the Dare Ogunbowale role. I think he should be the third back that is a special teams back first and foremost. And he brings, if something were to happen to Joe Mixon, he brings you a durable, big bodied back that can get downhill. But the number two back on this team that gets the second most reps he needs to be a back that brings speed to the table. He needs to be a back that brings playmaking ability to the table, because right now you don't have it. You don't have it in the backup running back role. You don't have it on the offense. I mean, you got Nico Collins. You got Joe Mixon is more of a downhill bruiser that is a down to down better than most. But we haven't seen him be used as the weapon that we thought he would be. You got to have some level of speed, and I just think there's a real opportunity at that second, which is more of a scat back in this offense. I think there's a real opportunity for the Texans offense to get better.
A couple of texts coming in on the text line. How do we get the DP against the Titans? I don't understand all the give up on DP. He had a 97-yard run last year, and they only put him in a handful of plays a game, if that. He can cook. They just have to let him.
It is confusing. That text is,
that's fair, right? He has not gotten enough opportunity.
Well, the thing is, you ask why. Like, what the guys that spend the most time with him, the coaches that tell you how much they believe in him, will go 17 games and get him 2 carries in a game. Like that's what I'm leaning into. I don't believe that the scheme change was that big of a deal. There may have been some personal life stuff going on that he needed to figure out. That's fine, but he is a back that would at least be serviceable, and he's shown that when he's given extended run. But he just for whatever reason, the team doesn't feel that way now. He is not. If you didn't have Joe Mixon, he'd be your starter, and then you'd need a counterpunch to him. The reality is, you've got Joe Mixon.
You feel like he's the same as Mixon.
When it comes to the approach to the game, he's very similar to Mixon, and you need some guy. You need some level of change of pace back there that you believe in, that is a mainstay in your offense, that is a weapon for CJ Stroud, and changes the game for you. I mean, that's right now you're just conceding.
Yeah.
If Joe Mixon isn't on the field, you're just conceding. You're just saying, okay, well, our back's not going to be a threat. We're not going to have a threat out of the backfield.
Yeah.
Right? And in the process, you're leaving him on the field too much and wearing him down to where the offensive coordinator even said, well, we'd like to use him in the pass game, but we can't because he's so worn down. That's one area where I think this team, no-brainer, can get better.
But, Clint, we will know. We will know how they feel about Damian Pierce, because there is a thought of – Nick Caley coming in, a new voice, a new offensive play caller.
Yeah.
And if they don't go, like, listen, where do they draft J.J. Taylor? In like the fifth, sixth round, something like that? That ain't like, if somebody gets drafted in that late, like, that is not a draft pick that jumps Damian Pierce.
No,
we'll
I,
see if they're, how serious they are about it if it's earlier in the draft.
I've really got my eye on the blue kid out of Texas.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's and whether it's him or not, I like him. I hope it's him. I don't know, after running what he ran at his pro day, he's gonna climb the draft a little bit. So I don't know where he necessarily lands, but a guy like that just has the pass catching ability, has the speed and explosiveness that you're talking about, and I think you're gonna be able to get him late two, early three at the most, if not later. And so, you know, a guy like that would just bring so much to this team.
Yeah.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
All right, assuming that the Texans would be going offensive line, which at this point I don't know how much of an assumption you can make there. It's clearly something that we feel they need to be better at. But Nick Caserio got up there in that pre-draft presser earlier this week saying that they don't feel like they have to take any particular player, that they just want to get their best guys, which, you know, you can take that for whatever you want. But let's have that assumption, if you will, just to work with me here, because Ryan Ramczyk, a very good tackle for the New Orleans Saints, announced that he was retiring. Was that yesterday, in fact, or the day before? And that made me think the Saints, who I think people had looked at as possibly adding a weapon, or really, I mean, Shedeur Sanders became an interesting look with the Derek Carr news that happened. I was like, what happens if they take an offensive lineman? And then that got me going even further. What happens if some of these teams ahead of you, like, do the worst thing possible, which is they all kind of team up and have a run on the position that maybe you would want to select, which I think for a lot of fans is offensive line. Although I will acknowledge, and I see you out there before you even type up your text and send it into the Jim Mallard, the Text Hammer text line. Thank you, Jim. No, I want weapons. I want a wide receiver. I get it. I understand. But if everybody goes on a run for offensive linemen, or at least the ones that seem, the teams that seem reasonable, we know that Nick Caserio would trade up. Where would he have to get to in order to like get a guy that you like? Because I started thinking about it, and I think that the top three is probably where it was, where it's going to be. Is that fair? Like, I think that it's going to be Cam Ward and one of the two, what I would consider the blue chip guys in this draft, which is Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say so.
And then once you get beyond that and you're looking at the teams that remain after that, I think that's where it gets really interesting on who may or may not select, or at least when it comes to need, take an offensive lineman and then kind of make things interesting for you. Because, like, you get to four at, with the New England Patriots, and that's easily a place where offensive line – in fact, offensive line has been mocked there a good amount. You have a young quarterback in Drake May. They could take one, right? All right, fifth at Jacksonville. That feels like something that when you look for needs – for them, that feels like something that they could, yeah, in fact, go for. I think Mason Graham has been slotted their defensive lineman, but that's one that could go. And actually, before I even go further on this,
to go all O-line,
yeah,
yeah,
right. So let's go. I want to take a step back, because who are the offensive linemen that you'd be comfortable with this Texans team, right? Because I feel like of the guys who are probably first rounders, there's by my count 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, that probably sounds right. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head.
We can do it. I think Will Campbell is up there clearly as a tackle. Mm-hmm. Armand Membu, Missouri, is up there as a tackle. I think both of those guys are well outside of your range of what the Texans might be able to get. The guys that I think the Texans would be considering: Tyler Booker, which would be 3. Gray Zabel, 4. Josh Connerly Jr. is maybe. I don't know how they feel about him, although they have talked to him. That'd be 5.
Mm-hmm.
Donovan Jackson out of Ohio State, 6. Kelvin Banks Jr. out of Texas, 7. And then the other two that I think are possible maybe in this space is maybe Josh Simmons. Well, Josh Simmons has the talent. I just don't know how much the Texans would be interested in him. And then is it Antoine or Ursary out of Minnesota?
Oh,
another tackle.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how you say that first name.
I don't even remember what his first name is. I know it's A and I know it's Ursary. So there's 9. So, like, is it possible, is basically my thought process, that you get 7, 8, 9 offensive linemen in the first 24 picks that would force Nick Caserio into a place where he would trade up, or maybe he would just sit there and take the talented players that dropped to him.
Right.
But I was like, if they were so locked in on offensive linemen, where would they have to get to? Like, just as in a thought experiment.
I know, it's a good question. I think 100%, just to answer the first part of your question, 100% there's a scenario where this could play out. Now, Vegas has set the total number of offensive linemen drafted in the first round at 6.5, and the under is a heavy favorite at -300. So the betting favorite is 6 or less offensive linemen drafted in the first round. However, I was looking at a list NFL.com put out of the top 5 needs of every team in the NFL entering the draft. And 20 of the 24 teams in front of the Texans included offensive line. So you can make the case that just about everybody, I mean, you can make this case every year. Everyone always needs offensive line.
Yeah, there's not enough, are there?
So you can make a strong case, as you started to do, going through the order of, oh, yeah, this team, you could see them drafting an offensive lineman. Oh, yeah, this team. So obviously it depends how it plays out. But sure, there's a scenario where some of those earlier teams make a run on offensive linemen, and if there's a guy that you like in that top 6 or 7, if you're the Texans, you might have to move up about, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 spots to the mid-teens to get one of your guys if there is that big of a run early on in the draft. But it's hard. I also come of the school of thought, I don't know if I would trade up for an offensive lineman in general, just as like a rule.
Okay.
But
So even without the circumstance, this worst case scenario of offensive line being there's a run on offensive line in the first round, you're like, nope.
Yeah, I'll catch you. I'll come back around. I'll catch you later.
So it seems like you'd be more inclined to go to the circumstance of take one of these talented players that would slide
BPA,
to you, right?
Best player available.
Or yeah, would you go?
I usually am need, but I guess in this case, maybe I'd shift to wide receiver.
Well, is a need, right? I don't think you have a starting caliber wide receiver there.
It'd be between those two. If there's an offensive lineman I like, take him. Otherwise, don't force the issue. I'll come back in an offensive lineman, maybe with my next pick, at a good wide receiver now.
Okay, so if that was the case, it feels like the offensive linemen that might be there for you are the likes of like the Tate Ratledge, the Marcus Imbau, that kind of, and you feel like you're good there where you go with this, not getting the crop of kind of the higher end of the offensive linemen and going into maybe that second tier, that second group of offensive linemen.
Yeah, yeah, I do, because I think offensive linemen, I know it hasn't worked out recently. I know Texans fans are scarred, and rightfully so, but I think offensive linemen in general can be a little bit safer when it comes to drafting or bringing people in and trying to develop them. And I was gung-ho of it has to be offensive line first round, and then I listened to the podcast with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, and that kind of convinced me. They played a clip from the 49ers where the 49ers said they don't believe in drafting offensive linemen in the first round. They want the first round to be guys who get the ball in their hands and make plays. And if you go back, you look, the Niners haven't drafted a lineman in the first round since 2018, which I think was right at the start or even before the current regime got there. But that's their philosophy. And Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah, both former scouts in the league, both actually said, I kind of agree with that. You could get an offensive lineman in the second round and not see a big difference, right? Don't give up a lot of assets for them. And the point that they made as well was scheme is important, where you could coach more out of the offensive lineman. But also Daniel Jeremiah said, I thought the interesting point was he'd rather have an offensive line full of C talent as opposed to like two Pro Bowlers, two guys that aren't very good and one mediocre. He'd rather be on that level plane where, you know, you're only as good as your weakest part. So that kind of convinced me that I thought, yeah, you know what? You don't have to break the bank or trade up or give away these assets for an offensive lineman. Circle back, get one in, say, the second or third round. And I know the Texans don't have a good reputation in recent years, but try to coach them up or try to get them in the right scheme fit that will work for
you. Do y'all feel like that's what the Houston Texans are trying to do right now? Because it seemed like they kind of going that route of, you know, hey, salute the Laramie, but let's go with some C-level type players and just move forward like that instead of trying to get all the first rounds, the Pro Bowlers and all that stuff. It seemed like they trying to get a lot of C-level players on this offensive line right now.
Well, I mean, to some degree, yeah. And if you are willing to take Nick Caserio at face value, which I know some people aren't, on the idea that, you know, the opportunity simply presented itself for Laramie Tunsil and they moved on, it has felt like they've just kind of done the, okay, once you make that move, how do we then, you know, cobble together, has a little bit of a connotation, but that's the word that I'll use in this instance, cobble together an offensive line, maybe a little bit in line with what Bucky Brooks, Daniel Jeremiah were thinking, that we feel is sufficient and get five guys that are able to kind of work in tandem to make a more...
Work the scheme.
Yeah, work in a scheme and to make a better offensive line. It just feels like that is a tough sell for me personally coming off the season that you had, and also seeing the rhetoric that they've put down, particularly about how protecting C.J. Stroud is the most important thing when it comes to offensively, and especially when you consider just how light this offense was in carrying their end of the load when it came to the defense giving you incredible play. So I still look at it and I'm like, I would very much love an offensive lineman, but yeah, man, I think it is fair to then look at it and go, hey, getting yourself, talented players, weapons-wise, in that circumstance might be a way to go about it. I just keep looking at the fact that I would like not just having an offensive lineman because I think that it would help this year, but also an offensive lineman of a certain caliber, understanding the other context, which is you have not had a great track record and you have guys that are stepping in to be the guys that help coach up a talent, which is necessary with any player that you draft. And you have Cole Popovich, who I don't know what to believe in there, and then Nick Caley, who is a first-time offensive coordinator. Give yourself the best opportunity with a guy who's maybe as close as possible and start to establish a foundation for years future on your offensive line. But I think it's a fair point. I just thought of the experiment to maybe get to the heart of some of that, and I think it's a good point that you laid down.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. How high up would you be willing to go, or how high up do you think, going back to the original question, do you think the Texans would have to move up to get one of those guys?
And I feel like you could in my feeling, especially because I like a lot of these offensive linemen. I think there's a relatively large group of guys that I like. I think that I probably go up into like maybe max 9 picks, which is still a lot. Like up,
yeah, that's a big.
Well,
yeah.
Although 9 picks wouldn't work exactly because the Cardinals are at 16. We're probably one of those teams that I would look at as likely wanting to draft an offensive lineman. But, yeah, man, up into that late teens area is probably where I think you would have to go. And I think the cost there might be prohibitive to where I don't know that I would want to do that. But, yeah, a point made that I think obviously factors in here. And I was just kind of trying to use this as a way to suss it out. But if you have 6, 7, 8 offensive linemen going that early, they're pushing down some really solid players that really can probably still help this team, whether it's an interior defensive lineman or wide receiver. And then at that point, you go there and I think you try and prosper. And maybe the counter move there wouldn't be trading up at one or with your number 25. It'd be trading up with your second round pick with that additional value to get back up higher in the second round to then play at the high ends of that next tier of offensive line.
It's just tough having a 25th overall pick like that and you needing a offensive line like that because like you said, all the teams would love to take an offensive line. I feel like some teams just take them just because. Like, what's wrong with taking another offensive lineman just in case? So I think that's tough overall, especially if it's a need.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing that I would say also limits this, we know that they have a smaller board, and then there's a couple of names that you mentioned, Daniel Jeremiah. He talked about Tyler Booker and Kelvin Banks, two guys that not only feel like they played the kind of level of football that you want, but also seem to fit the ethos, that swarm mentality that is talked about. I do wonder if those two guys in particular would make it so that Nick Caserio and the organization would consider trading up. But yeah, I'm finding myself to be in a place where I don't want them to trade up in pretty much any circumstances. It's stick and pick or trade back and accumulate more darts, more weapons to use. That's right. Happy, Thursday?
Friday Eve, yeah.
Happy Thursday to you. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Do we make sure to thank D&M Auto Leasing one more time?
You know what? That's a great point, Reggie. And Crosstalk is sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing.
I just wanted to make sure that we thanked them. Mm-hmm. Wow, words.
Big thanks.
It's incredible. D&M Auto Leasing. It's incredible. All right. John Lopez, Reginald Attitude, Figgy Fig here hanging out with you. People are excited for the question of the day that's coming. I appreciate Kicks Rocks on the YouTube saying that I'm sure. They say that they established ahead of time with their family and friends that they're just bad at texting.
Oh, I like that one. I'm just bad at texting.
Man.
That's a lot of.
I'm bad at texting.
Lying is a useful tool in society.
How can you be bad at texting? But that's neither here nor there for now.
It's very easy to be bad at texting, apparently, because there's a lot of us that are.
And he texted that in.
Yeah. He sure did. Right. Well, no, it's YouTube. He might have been, typing it necessarily. All right, let's get going on a Thursday. Always get involved with the program on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. 713-572-4610. Also, again, appreciation of Mokarem Injury Lawyers for the live streams on YouTube as Kicks Rocks used, and then also on Twitch available for you as well. Later on in the program at noon, be by your radios if you're getting more of that Rockets fever. We're going to talk to NBA writer for The Athletic, Kelly Eco. Get you ready for some Rockets Warriors. Kind of talk through some of that series and what the altitude of this Rockets team could be. We'll talk to him about that. But let's start by going back a day rather than going forward a few days to Nick Caserio, the draft press conference or the pre-draft press conference that he gave that was, it was long. There were some interesting things within it. Maybe there was potentially some lies in there. And we'll circle back around too. But Lopez, there's one thing that just has been sticking with you since yesterday.
I always talk about this. On the drive home, I kind of recap the show in my mind and some of the things we did and didn't do and should have said, et cetera. And it just kept sort of festering. The way that he bristled and got progressively more defiant about his offensive line and his staff's offensive line evaluations and drafts. And I kept going back to I'm paraphrasing, but he actually said something along the lines of it worked in New England. And my whole mentality kind of changed. And he never really took responsibility for what we can all acknowledge. In fact, that's when he dropped the F-bomb, have been bad evaluations or maybe incompletes on offensive linemen. And I just, is he dug in? Is he dug in on how they do this? And the way they evaluate or is he one of those guys that he often says, we evaluate everything, we talk about everything. It just seemed like he's a little dug in on this whole offensive line thing.
That's interesting that you viewed it that way. I don't want to make it seem as though like I did not see where you're coming from. I did, right? Like it felt like with the outsized and very clear issues that you had at offensive line last year, mm-hmm. that when you're asked like, uh, what you know, have you changed the evaluation process on offensive line to then kind of put that in? Well, we look at all our processes, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the idea of the response. It's like, well, it feels like you have a particular place that seemingly needs more attention, mm-hmm. right? It's the, you know, well, there's this one house burning. Did you look at maybe putting some water on that? Well, you know, we put water on all of the houses. but this one right here in this particular instance seemingly mm-hmm. needs it. I don't think that that inherently means that they're not going to do that. And I do wonder how much of that do you view as the natural kind of, you know, smoke screening that happens at this particular time of year headed into a draft? Or how much of that do you feel like is just kind of what you would say possibly digging in?
I'm going to be honest, none. You don't need to smoke screen that. You know, you don't need to be, you know, evasive or vague about certain things. You know, you it has nothing to do with, are you going to draft an offensive lineman? That wasn't even close to the question.
And it feels like that's actually been sort of conceded.
Right, and it's been conceded.
Although, to be fair, he's like, all we have to do is draft good players when he was asked about that.
Stay tuned at 12:40.
Okay.
So it really doesn't have anything to do with, the question had nothing to do with, are you going to draft an offensive lineman? What do you think about the offensive lineman?
Do you want to hear one of his responses to this?
Listen closely to what he says.
This is when he was asked about his thoughts on the current state of the offensive line and the ongoing rebuild.
I mean, honestly, it's the same every year. Like, every year is different. We understand there's going to be turnover on the team.
Wait, can we press pause? Can we press pause? The first two statements are what, Lopez?
It's the same every year. Every year is different.
I was re-listening to that this morning again, and I was like, huh?
I mean, honestly, it's the same every year. Like, every year is different.
That's hilarious. I think I get what he was trying to go for, which is like
every year is different.
Get a little worse, Alec, going on.
What he's saying is every year is different every year.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Hilarious mm-hmm. situation there to do with that. All right, let's run it.
I mean, honestly, it's the same every year. Like, every year is different. We understand there's going to be turnover on the team. We know there's certain players whose contracts are going to expire. We're going to be able to keep some. There's other players that are under contract that they might be here, they might not be here. We didn't go into the off season and say, okay, here are the things that we're going to do. I think some of this is, you always have to be adaptable. You have to be flexible and just take the information in and then just make the decisions that you feel, you know, our best for the football team, which is what we did. So there's never this is what we're going to do. This is what we think is going to happen. Some of this responded to some of the information around you. And, you know, if we didn't make any changes, if we had to go into the season with the group that we had, then we would have done that. But wasn't the case. I'd say each case was a little bit different. Each situation was a little bit different. But, yeah, I wouldn't say there was anything specific that we said, well, this is what we're going to do. This is what we need to do. And then even moving forward, understanding the draft is one opportunity. It's probably the biggest volume opportunity, which is why there's such a heightened, I would say, awareness and emphasis on it. I mean, we don't put any more emphasis on a draft than we do any other phase of the team building process. So lost some players or moved on from some players at a lot of different positions. We've added some players at other positions, including the offensive line. So, you know, once the players are here, once we have an opportunity to get on the field, we'll kind of see how it all fits together.
All right, so that's about the offensive line and the turnover and all that. And that was a fair question, and that was a good answer, to be honest. You know, it frankly was a very good answer on his part. A little vague, which you should expect, and you would hope you want your general manager to be.
Because you would expect. I don't know how much everybody...
Well, I kind of want it. We're all pulling for this team. Sure. You know, we don't want them to give away any secrets too much. I mean, we're curious, but we don't want to give them any away secrets. My thing was... when he was pressed on the shortcomings with the offensive line. That's where it just kept rolling around in my head, and I'm like, he has to have reevaluated how they look at offensive linemen. He has to have looked at it.
All right.
Because if he didn't, if he has this quote, as I put in there, it worked in New England mentality, then that's a problem.
Yeah, this is Nick Caserio after being asked if the Texans need to have internal evaluation about how they draft offensive linemen.
I mean, we look at everything on a constant basis. So, again, it's case by case. I mean, a lot of faith and confidence. I mean, I'd say the entire building, you know, starting with D'Amico and the coaching staff, have a lot of confidence in that group. So, again, look at everything, and we'll try to make decisions that, you know, we think make sense for your organization. They're not all going to work. I mean, I've said this before. I mean, I don't know how many times I've said it, but it's a lot. You can ask Omar. I mean, a draft 50-50. I mean, that's what it is. So some are going to work, some aren't going to work. I mean, that's just the way it goes. So we're no different than any other team. So if there's something that we can improve and tweak and adjust, we'll look at it. So it's never one particular thing and never one factor, but we're always open-minded and always trying to find, you know, ways to make things better.
And that's what you hope for. But you could tell, and it started right there, because then it came back again later, that he just kind of got a little bit, you could sense, you know, a little bit more frustrated with the line of questioning about, hey, you good with the way you're doing offensive line evaluations? And that's what made me wonder about this.
Yeah, I don't know that this is like, you know, dug in on the it worked in New England mentality, mm-hmm. per se. I think that this is more a philosophical perspective for him on the idea that, hey, man, the draft is a crapshoot of sorts. Like the draft, you're taking, you know, it's lottery tickets of sorts, mm-hmm. right? You're throwing darts or what have you, right? Whatever imagery you want to use here. And so I think that there is, in some ways, a lack of a concession on the idea mm-hmm. that you're going to hit all the time, or necessarily that every, you know, that they are bad at evaluating in those places. Mm-hmm. But I think that you just have to like lean into the idea that there's a level of confidence in the organization and sure. some of the decision makers. And I think that is one of the things that he said there. And I think for me personally, I think I lean into the confidence of the draft pool this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that especially where you're drafting at 25, or where you could be drafting around there, whether you decide to move up anywhere up to like in the first, I don't know, 15 draft right. Picks or what have you. If you want to move up that way, if you want to move back into the earlier parts of the second round, into the rest of the second round,
mm-hmm.
there seems to be a lot of interesting players that are well-regarded all the way around that give you an opportunity of drafting a good player, particularly on the offensive line, which is the portion of this team yeah. that we have some level of questions on mm-hmm. their evaluating process.
I think ultimately where we all agree, in the building, outside the building, the biggest fan, the harshest critic, is wherever they draft an offensive lineman this year, it may not even be in the first round, it has to be a hit. It has to be successful, because he's already sort of, like I said, bristling about this whole notion. If this next one doesn't hit, well, then it's just going to multiply, you know?
How immediate are you looking for a hit there? Because I think
you can't do it the first year, right? I mean, unless it's a first round pick, then you want to see something the first year. You want to see some level of getting into a rotation, perhaps starting. You know, first round offensive linemen, generally speaking, unless it's like pick number 30 or 32 or something, are expected to be starters. So
with some understanding that there's going to be some growth,
right? Right.
That's necessary.
Right. So I would say if they draft a lineman in the first round, a year from today, we'll be, and it doesn't hit, we'll be going, hey man, it's going to multiply, you know, this whole concept.
Which is interesting, because it feels like in what I've heard described and what continues to ring around in my head, this draft was described as a meat and potatoes draft.
Mm-hmm.
I know others have described it as a starter's draft, but maybe not a stars draft.
Yeah.
It feels like you should probably be in some ways understanding, expecting of the idea that maybe you get a guy who's good and will be even better in 2 years or what have you, mm-hmm. or a year or 2 years, rather than the guy who maybe immediately comes in and is great. I know that I was recalling Nick Caseri was talking about how, you know, you have all these guys in the building and that whoever you draft is already going to come in behind because yeah. of how far ahead they are and how much they, and kind of bring this to a different thing they've talked about, mm-hmm. how much they seem to believe in the guys that they've acquired in that offensive line room for the competition, right? Those guys, your draft picks, whoever you would bring in would be behind.
Yeah.
I think that there's a level of comfort that seems that comes with all of that line of thinking, that if you bring in a guy, even if they're not capable of like immediately coming in and taking over a starter role, mm-hmm. that they can develop into a good player. So I do wonder, when you talk about hit on an offensive line, if this isn't one of those things that's going to be more of a 2-year process to develop, to evaluate.
Well,
if
and
it's a hit.
That feeds directly into another possibility that could certainly help here. If players like Juice Scruggs, you know, all of a sudden blossom, then his previous drafts start to look a little better. You know, obviously the Kenyon Green, that ship has sailed. But you know, guys like Juice Scruggs, obviously, you know, Fisher,
yeah.
Let's say Fisher, you know, blossoms this year, then that'll help him too. It's not just about this draft.
Yeah. That recontextualizes the whether or not there actually is a deficiency in Correct. Evaluation there.
But if they don't and they don't hit, Ooh.
Yeah. All right. So somebody asked us this yesterday on the text line, and I don't know that I circled back around to it in the way that I wanted to. If you were to admit that there is like a deficiency in evaluation on offensive line for this organization,
mm-hmm.
would it then make more sense to utilize high value capital to in that place? Or would it make more sense to not use high value capital and go away from that in acknowledgement of whatever deficiency we're seeing?
I would say use it. And I know people are going to say, well, he used it on Kenyon Green. I get it. Hey, I understand it. That was bad. That's part of this. That's the biggest part of this narrative, right?
And that comes in especially because I know that Jonathan Alexander mm-hmm. was writing about the possibility of trading up in right. this draft for someone like a Kelvin Banks, who I think mm-hmm. Daniel Jeremiah is talking about as one of two guys that this team probably is locked in on that have been highly discussed with the Texans team. Mm-hmm. Kelvin Banks Jr., tackle or guard out of Texas. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, Tyler Booker out of Alabama, the guard out of Alabama. Like those are two guys that are attached to him. So like maybe you go, do you feel like, all right, these guys aren't evaluating strong enough? Should they utilize that capital to go up? And you're saying, do it.
Yeah, I'd rather take a chance with a first round pick than a second round pick. And if he's saying it's 50-50, which by the way, as we mentioned yesterday, it's not. I mean, there are teams, a lot of teams that have better than a 50-50 hit rate. But if it's better, if it is 50-50, I'd rather do the 50-50 chance in the first round than the second or third.
Yeah, I think that I scuffle a little bit or a little bit at the notion of like then using the additional capital to go mm-hmm. up. But just generally, I'm like, yo, use the high value capital because this, especially with this draft, again, circling back to around to the strength of this class, you have a lot of guys who look like they could be solid starters in this pool. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like you're working in a barrel full of fish.
Yeah.
Right. So like if you're fishing in this where there's more good than bad, go ahead and operate in this space as opposed to depending on the idea that you're going to hit on something later, even mm-hmm. if it's a less value on the pick.
But, yeah.
Well, it's interesting, man. We are a week away from night one of the NFL today's draft in 2025. So, man, excited to get, as we get closer to it, to see what ultimately comes of all of this conversation, all of the hot air and the bloviating and the hypothesizing. Where does Nick Caserio and this Texans organization actually go when they come up and their time comes to make a pick? Do they trade? Do they move? That's something that he left very, very open.
People are intrigued by the idea of Seth Payne as a heel. I am too.
I like this concept of cheap heat.
Yeah.
Where you said that one of our listeners said introduced me to the concept of cheap heat, where you basically just insult the city that you're
in. Yeah, I think you'd be excellent at that.
That's the old Andy Kaufman thing, right? When he was like, Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's cheap heat, yes.
We're just wrestling women in general. Like, that's a good form of cheap heat, yeah.
Andy Kaufman was walking heat back in the day, yes. All right, mock draft injection time. Let's do this here. This is Josh Edwards, CBS Sports. A 7-round mock draft. We are 6 days away from night one of the draft. We are, we're 6 days away from Thursday night. We're a week away from day two. And he does a 7-rounder here. We'll go through a few of these picks. There is one in particular in the third round. The Texans have 2 third-round picks. That's very interesting to me. But first, let's start with the first-round pick, 25th overall, with the 25th overall pick in the Josh Edwards CBS Sports 7-round mock draft. The Houston Texans select Gray Zabel, offensive lineman, North Dakota State University. Seth, for the second straight day, we have our mock draft expert. Yesterday was John Harris, live on the air with us, taking Gray Zabel. And now we've got Josh Edwards taking Gray Zabel, when, admittedly, a lot of the big-time offensive linemen have flown off the board already, including the two that Daniel Jeremiah said the Texans for sure want to take, which is Tyler Booker and Kelvin Banks Jr.
Yeah, and I think that some of the – at 25, I know that Caserio swears by gar that we don't draft for need. Sometimes it conveniently works out that a position of need also happens to have one of the best available players at that point. When you just do the exercise of going through various mock drafts, it's hard, like, regardless of whether the person's accurate or not. – It's rare that you find the Texans sitting at 25 without a notable name at offensive guard or offensive tackle that's right there.
Yeah.
Whether it's Tyler Booker or Gray Zabel or Donovan Jackson, just at the guard position if you're looking at Donovan Jackson as a guard. And likewise with the tackles, there's usually a pretty appetizing name there. So if what you need is an offensive lineman and you want to take the best player available, I think it just – this is the kind of year where it feels like it's going to work out.
Yeah, I think so too. And interior offensive linemen tend to drift to that back end of the first round as opposed to the upper part anyways, just as a position.
So Gray Zabel, my reservations about him are mostly just the same that I think that Caserio and other GMs do after from small school guys. It's you just haven't seen the body of work of him going versus big stud dudes the way you have when somebody plays at a big school. So he showed a lot of promise at the Senior Bowl, but it's still a really small body of work. That's where I just feel like knowing and seeing the way Nick has operated the last few years, that if it comes down to maybe, let's say it's Tyler Booker or Gray Zabel and they're both available right there, I feel like Nick just feels better about the body of work of Tyler Booker.
Yeah.
He might very much see the upside in Gray Zabel, but he's just more comfortable with Tyler Booker.
Could totally see that. By the way, have you noticed that the one thing that you and I were nervous about a month or so ago as the combine was getting ready to take place, Kenneth Grant testing through the roof and winding up a top 10 or 12 pick. He is sitting there still at 25 in a lot of these mock drafts.
Well, and you know, that was a really interesting thing John said yesterday that we didn't get a chance to circle back to. And I might have to have him on my live stream this week. John just kind of casually said, well, you know, you never know when he might get upset and decide to leave in the middle of practice. And I'm like, oh.
I think he was talking about Walter Nolan.
Oh, did you?
Know,
I thought you said Walter Nolan. Oh, okay. No,
I said,
you said Charles Grant, offensive tackle.
Hang on. Slow down. I was just talking about Kenneth Grant from Michigan just now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somehow I heard, I'm sorry. I was thinking defensive tackles and I heard Walter Nolan.
No. I was talking about Kenneth Grant. You love Kenneth Grant. And remember going into the combine, we were worried that Kenneth Grant was going to go from intriguing prospect to specimen that tested through the roof on the 40 and things like that.
So Walter Nolan, disregard to everybody. I wasn't talking about Kenneth Grant. I was talking about Walter Nolan.
Yeah. But Kenneth Grant is still sitting there in a lot of these drafts.
That caught my ear. Yeah, the big thing was Kenneth Grant. And this is why, again, I try as much as possible to defer to guys like John Harris. I mean, people that have access to the All-22 and watch the entire season of some of these guys, the question about Kenneth Grant a lot is that he seems to run hot and cold, that it's not as consistent. He got better this last year from the previous year. So it's not, he doesn't have as glistening a resume and a track record. I like the upside of Kenneth Grant. Mm-hmm. I think that he looks more athletic on film than how he tested at the combine. So that's an intriguing one. I feel like he still might be a big wild card, that he might show up in the first round earlier than a lot of people expect right
now.
He's
still there in this draft, which is why I brought him up. Would you rather have Gray Zabel or Kenneth Grant if you were the general manager?
I'd rather right now, and I'm a fan who doesn't draft best player available, I want Gray Zabel.
Yeah.
I think all the same upside for Kenneth Grant is there for Gray Zabel. I think by offensive line standards, the stuff at the Senior Bowl especially really showed that, man, he moves his feet really, really well.
Yep.
And has a good feel for body positioning and everything in a way that you can't teach that. If a guy doesn't have good feet, lots of guys are going in the first round where there's kind of questions about just whether they're athletic enough to have the footwork they need. I don't worry about that with Gray Zabel. I think he's just got a special level of fluidity to him.
All right, with the 58th pick, we don't need to – okay, we'll do it. Darius Alexander, defensive tackle, Toledo. 79th overall, Dylan Sampson, running back, Tennessee, who John Harris had the Texans taking yesterday with the 89th overall selection. Now, Ben, give me the sounder here. This is an interesting one. With the 89th overall pick in the Josh Edwards CBS Sports mock draft, the Houston Texans select Isaiah Bond, wide receiver, Texas. And for those who aren't up to speed on the Isaiah Bond story, Isaiah Bond has been accused by a woman in Texas of sexual assault. Now, Isaiah Bond, and this is very recent, he's lawyered up now, and lawyers for Isaiah Bond have filed a lawsuit against this woman who they say made false statements to the Frisco, Texas Police Department. Bond turned himself in last week on an outstanding sexual assault warrant and he was released after a $25,000 bond. Bond's lawyers say a sexual encounter with the woman, unnamed in the suit, was consensual. The lawsuit asked for economic damages and a civil trial. Bond's agent, Damian Butler, sent an email to all 32 NFL teams with the first page of the lawsuit attached, writing that Bond, quote, is completely innocent of the allegations levied against him and will fight to clear his name, end quote. Bond went on social media and said the accusations were patently false. So he is denying these charges, and to the extent where he's got lawyers and he's countersuing this woman, or he's suing this woman. I don't know if she's filed a lawsuit. He got arrested. So this is a criminal issue that he's turned into a civil issue against her. I guess my overall question here, Seth, is the Texans in this mock draft have not yet taken a wide receiver. Do you think the Texans have the appetite for this off-field, you know, fairly high-profile off-field stuff going on with Isaiah Bond at pick 89?
I think it's one of those things where you got to look into it really aggressively and try to figure out if there's something that's very clear that, okay, this is extortion or something like that. Like, if they can find that, okay, this is almost definitely bogus,
yeah.
Hypothetically, I have zero clue about exactly, you know. Then I think, yeah, it might be an opportunity. It might be. Remember Lyle Collins? When Lyle Collins emerged as a person of interest in a homicide, the offensive tackle, the Cowboys ended up drafting him.
They ended up. Did they draft him or sign him? I think they got him as an unrestricted. I don't think
they got him.
Yeah,
they gave him the same deal that he would.
I think that's what it was. I think he was. I'll check. But go ahead. Continue with the story.
Well, no, because anyway. So that was a weird one because it happened right before the draft. He wasn't even a suspect or anything, but it scared the hell out of a lot of people.
Yeah, he was a good player. He's thought to be like a first-round talent.
Right. My thought at the time was, and I advocated this for the Texans, just because you draft a guy doesn't mean you have to sign him to your team.
Yes.
And I felt like as soon as he dropped below his position, go ahead and draft him. Obviously do your research and everything because you want to find out is there something to this? It turned out there was nothing to it.
Yeah.
He had nothing to do with it at all. I felt like that was a situation where some teams were more scared off by a potential negative PR hit.
For sure.
Yeah, felt like, man, you don't have to pay him a cent and figure out what the risk-reward is here and just draft the guy if you feel like there's a good chance that he's not involved in
it. He went undrafted in 2015, so all 32 teams passed on him the whole draft, and he wasn't even accused of anything.
You know what happened after was his agent had told teams, hey, if you draft us past a certain round, we're not signing. So they kind of...
Yeah, they may poison the waters a little
bit. Yeah, I think there are a lot of teams that had the idea I just had, but that his agent, who I think his agent also later admitted that it was a bluff, but said that we're not going to sign if you draft him.
Yeah, I was doing day three of the draft that week, and I remember saying the Texans should draft him. You know, use one of these six-round picks you have. You can draft a guy you're probably going to cut, or you can draft Lael Collins, who might not – he may actually be in trouble. Nobody's advocating murder by drafting Lael Collins in that situation.
No, and he doesn't ever have to be an employee of your team.
That's right.
You know, like, all you've done is drafted the rights sign him if it doesn't turn out that he's a murderer,
which
he was not.
He ended up not being. Ended up playing in the league for a long, long time. Absolutely. May still
so without so Isaiah Bond, not to make light of the accusations, obviously, he's a guy that – If you can do the research and dig in, and I'm guessing there's a whole bunch of draft day type scenarios with NFL teams right now, like where they're as unrealistic as the scenario in draft day, the movie was where the Browns had the 7th overall pick and they trade for the number one overall pick and then decide to start researching the guy they would draft number one overall. I think this is actually kind of a realistic scenario where teams are saying, all right, we really got to dig in and figure out this situation because there might be an opportunity here if he is completely innocent.
If I had to guess, they're already doing it. You know, they need a wide receiver and they've got picks in that range. And now he's supposed to go higher than 89, and you're right.
Right.
This might be a chance to get a small win on the margins there.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show.
Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow the Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.